So, picking up where I left off, here is the rest of my discussion about my experiences with Lyme disease and what information I've picked up along the way.
That's what's going to happen. People need to protect themselves from Lyme. That means definitely check for ticks. And this, we're not talking about just dog ticks, which are large and easy to find. You know, look up information online, look for pictures of the ticks, look for pictures of the various rashes. The rashes do not have to look like a bullseye. It can just be a red rash. There may not be a rash. If you have a constellation of symptoms ranging from something like a terrible, terrible flu to extreme fatigue, something like fibromyalgia type of pain and exhaustion, chronic fatigue syndrome type of fatigue that comes out of nowhere, there's a chance that you may have a latent Lyme disease or a co-infection inside of your body, and you may want to investigate it. Now, this shouldn't, you know, people shouldn't go into hysterics, but you need to take responsibility for your own health. That's what this is about. So, where was I? Basically, yeah, people need to take responsibility for their health, realize what Lyme symptoms are, what they can mean, and what's on the horizon. Well, there are actually new studies. For example, there was a study, I think it was a German study. I could be wrong about that. I don't have the information right in front of me, but there was a study conducted of Alzheimer's patients, autopsies of the brains of people with Alzheimer's, and in a majority of them, the doctors who conducted the autopsies found Lyme disease in their brains. That is strong suggestion that Lyme disease either is Alzheimer's disease, a manifestation, that Alzheimer's could be a manifestation of Lyme disease, or that Lyme disease bacteria triggered what a chain reaction that turned into Alzheimer's. Likewise, another study of the brains of people who were living with multiple sclerosis and died. They say people don't generally die from MS, so I'm not going to say people who died from MS, but people who had MS and then died. Autopsies of their brains showed in something like 80%, they found Lyme bacteria, which that's another interesting correlate, and that's sort of, you know, could be considered a conspiracy theory at this time, but it's a theory, probably not conspiracy, just a medical theory, that people with multiple sclerosis may in fact have Lyme disease. Now, when you look at the symptoms of MS, remember when I started being investigated for the crazy symptoms that were showing up out of nowhere about 5 years ago, and then could be traced back about 10 years before, based on less life-affecting symptoms, the doctor's initial reaction was to check for multiple sclerosis. Well, that's because, and then eventually I was diagnosed with Lyme disease. Lyme and MS symptoms are almost identical. In some cases, they are identical. That may be because multiple sclerosis may be caused by Lyme disease. Either it is a manifestation of Lyme disease, or it may be that Lyme disease causes so much inflammation in the body that that triggers what's called an autoimmune cascade, that basically then your body goes into an automatic mode of overproducing antibodies, and those antibodies they get confused and they start attacking your own body. But there may well be a link between multiple sclerosis and Lyme. Now, if that sounds a little crazy, there's also So there's an interesting thing to consider about it besides the symptoms. Lyme disease is, they know the cause of Lyme disease. It is a bacterial infection. No questions asked. The jury's not out on that. Lyme is a bacterial infection. Multiple sclerosis is considered an autoimmune disease of unknown origin. Nobody has any idea what causes it. It's a mystery. The one thing that researchers have seen is a very, very slight genetic component. Not that chromosomes cause it, but that there does seem to be a very slight increased risk of a patient with multiple sclerosis having a relative who also has multiple sclerosis. That could be because either they live in the same geographic area. Now, this is based on the Lyme connection theory. Could be because they live close to one another, and therefore they're likely to both live near a population of ticks that carry Lyme disease. Or it could be that, for example, they do know, they have found Lyme bacteria in semen, in vaginal fluids, and in human milk. So it could be that Lyme is sexually transmitted and then transmitted to a child via conception and incubation within the mother, or that the child could contract Lyme disease through mother's milk. Although, based on what they know about the transmission, it would be a low risk. So that actually would correlate with the very low but present connection between family members who share multiple sclerosis in the family. So that's one part. The other part is that Lyme disease is restricted to certain geographic areas in the world. Why is that? That's because ticks can only live in certain areas of the world. The environmental conditions have to be appropriate. It can't be too cold, it can't be too hot. So that's easily explained. Multiple sclerosis is also restricted primarily to certain geographic areas of the world. For example, multiple sclerosis is not endemic to anywhere near the equator. That's a mystery. That's something researchers have actually looked into and found no explanation. Well, you can look up maps online. Look up statistical information just based on statistics, not from any conspiracy theory website, but also from the CDC probably. I think they probably also have maps showing worldwide geographic distribution of Lyme disease, and then separately, worldwide geographic distribution of multiple sclerosis. The maps are almost identical. And yet, although there are theories, nobody has really taken these theories very far, that there's a link between Lyme disease and MS. If somebody put those puzzle pieces together and did some research and they found out that it were true, it would make sense of multiple sclerosis, which is regarded as a mystery. It's just this mysterious autoimmune condition that surfaces in people randomly with no rhyme or reason. If it comes from an infection, mystery solved. They know what causes it. Now, there have been cases of, and you can look this up too, I think the Guardian newspaper in the UK published a story about a German woman who had multiple sclerosis. It had progressed to the point where she couldn't walk anymore. She was in a wheelchair. She was losing her vision, just like my mother's cousin who died But this German woman, she got sick with something and she was treated with antibiotics. Well, guess what? She was suddenly able to walk again. And through that process, people discovered, her doctors discovered, wait a minute, she never had multiple sclerosis, she had Lyme disease. She was cured through a longer-term treatment with antibiotics. Her multiple sclerosis was cured through antibiotics because it wasn't an autoimmune disorder, it was Lyme disease. So that may be something that's on the horizon for this disease. It's so complicated, it's poorly understood, in large part because there's resistance to proper research. The funding for researching Lyme disease is dismal. It hasn't been well funded compared to HIV and AIDS. Again, you know, during the 80s, because it was a crisis and people were so scared, there was so much public funding to figure out AIDS. That hasn't happened yet with Lyme disease, but mark my words, that's going to happen. We have celebrities who, unfortunately for them, but unfortunately, because these celebrities are coming out publicly as having Lyme, that's going to draw more public interest in finding out about it. And it's going to actually help a lot of people get diagnosed. But Avril Lavigne, the singer, it was just announced last week that Ashley Olsen has Lyme disease and that her life has been devastated by it. One of the reasons I started reading more about it, actually, is because I'm embarrassed to admit, I watched The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and one of the cast members, they've been chronicling her living with Lyme disease and so many of her symptoms, particularly the fatigue and inability to get out of bed or think or concentrate. I lose my train of thought constantly. I forget everything. I send myself text messages to remind myself of everything. Sometimes I can't even watch television, and this Beverly Hills Housewife cast member, Yolanda Foster, has said all of these same things. That made me curious about Lyme, because it sounded so familiar, and I started looking it up. That's one of the things that led me to finding out that these symptoms match my experiences. So what's next is, I just read this morning, George Mason University in Virginia, which is my alma mater. I got my bachelor's degree and my master's degree from George Mason. Just got funded to research a new and better diagnostic test for Lyme disease. Their funding was from the Commonwealth of Virginia, aka the state of Virginia, because Virginia, although I have a lot of political issues with Virginia being gay, and it being pretty much a traditional southern state, although it's become more progressive, Virginia has taken Lyme disease more seriously than almost any other state in the country, except possibly Connecticut, which is where Lyme originated. And they, to a certain extent, actually protect doctors who treat patients with Lyme disease. And I am so impressed with the way that Virginia is handling this. And now it looks like George Mason University is one of a number of different groups that are looking into finding a better diagnostic process for Lyme so that people who have it can actually find out they have it and then get treatment. Unfortunately, part of the interest in this sort of research has to do with money. If a university can discover a better test, let's call it a better mousetrap, once they find that better mousetrap, they will patent it, and they will own the rights to it, and then they can potentially make fortunes off of licensing this test, administering this test. And then when that happens, whoever's able to develop these better tests, then they will have the power and influence over medical treatment and all of these different things. That's the way that our system works. So, but at least they're looking into it. So to recap, Lyme. Is it difficult to diagnose and easy to cure? No, it's the opposite. It's, no, that came out wrong. Is it difficult to contract and easy to cure? It is easy to contract because tick populations are growing, because it may be sexually transmitted. It's not that difficult to contract. Is it easy to cure? Well, it may be easy to cure if it's caught early and the doctor treats it appropriately with a long enough duration and a strong enough dose of antibiotics. But once that period of time has elapsed and it has progressed to really a chronic condition, and the CDC will, they get angry when people say chronic Lyme, and they say there is no such thing as chronic Lyme. Well, ask people who have Lyme disease and ask the doctors who treat it and look up research on from the National Institutes of Health PubMed website. Chronic Lyme disease exists. Other countries acknowledge it. It's ridiculous to deny that it exists, but once Lyme is chronic, it's extraordinarily difficult to treat. A large significant reason for that is the political issues surrounding it, which I've discussed at length, but also because it's just hard to treat. It's very difficult to eradicate because this is such a stealthy bacterial infection. It is so smart. It has evolved the same way that human beings have evolved to exploit all resources in the body, just as we do with our home planet, while doing damage but not entirely killing it. That's what the Lyme bacteria do, and they hide. They protect themselves. If the planet's immune system is its weather and its natural resources, limitations and predators, human beings have been able to overcome those obstacles. Lyme bacteria are able to overcome the human body's obstacles. And so it takes, experimentation, it takes unconventional new forms of treatment, and that's the reality of it. But on the horizon, hopefully better diagnostics will be determined, and they'll be able to, the CDC will come around and lift its support of insurance companies' persecution of doctors who treat Lyme. Once that happens, well, all doctors are going to then feel comfortable. They'll become better educated. They'll be allowed to diagnose and treat Lyme, and then maybe it won't be such a big idea, a big mystery, a controversy, but for now, there are millions and millions and millions of people who have Lyme disease. Many of them don't know it. Many of them are in this ambiguous, nebulous diagnostic process. Many of them are starting to go crazy, as I was, because doctors are basically saying, all of your tests are normal. You need to stop coming here and complaining to me. Maybe you're getting older and your body is having a bunch of quirks, and this is the aging process. Get used to it and take some Zoloft. That's basically what they say. Well, guess what? If you're in your 20s and 30s and you're having joint problems that are limiting your mobility, that's not the natural aging process. That's not the way aging works. If you're skinny, or even if you're 20 pounds overweight and your body is covered in what looks like stretch marks, that's not normal. you may have a Bartonella infection, or you may have something else like Cushing syndrome or something, but you need to find a doctor who takes you seriously. And there really are good doctors who really truly care about patients out there, but there are more doctors who do the standard operating procedure and look at human beings as a list of a diagnostic criteria checklist. Do you have this? Do you have this? Do you have this? Let's give these tests. If the tests are negative, that absolutely rules it out, because doctors tend to think these days, as I think that many probably always have, what medical science knows and acknowledges right now is everything that there is to know. That isn't the case. That just is not the way that science works. We're always finding out new things. And half of the new things that we're discovering through scientific research is that what we previously knew was wrong. That's just the evolution of discovery. So if you find a doctor who's very cocky and believes that everything has an answer and that there's no point in investigating further, especially if they automatically diagnose your unknown condition as anxiety or imagined, that doctor is irresponsible, frankly. You know your body. You know your body better than anybody else. My mother told me this a long time ago, and it took me a long time to realize what she meant, but it turned out she was right. You cannot deny when your body is acting abnormally because you're the only person driving it. You've driven it your whole life, and you know if it's breaking down. If it's breaking down, you keep going to doctors and use the internet as a resource, use word of mouth as a resource, and find somebody who will take you seriously, not suggest to you that it's all in your head, and not just give you an antidepressant or anti-anxiety or antipsychotic medication and say, here you go, this is going to help you. One last note about that, and then I'm going to wrap this up and stop rambling. Anti-anxiety and anti-depression medications. Turns out, this was news to me that I got from my Lyme doctor, and I confirmed with my psychiatrist, as well as by reading medical journal articles. Some antidepressants, which are known as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, antidepressants have been used for decades now, and it's been assumed that these antidepressants generally work on serotonin and dopamine in your brain. Those are the happy chemicals. Those are the things that make you feel joy and all of that stuff. Well, the thing is, research never really showed exactly how these things work in the brain. In some cases they do, in some cases they don't, though, and the only reason they're prescribed is because they show evidence of working in patients. But just because a lot of pharmaceuticals are approved by the FDA, which again, the government makes money off of that, so the FDA should not be considered an impartial organization either. That's getting off track. Just because the FDA approves something does not mean necessarily that they really understand how it works. They just know that it sometimes does work. So, a lot of antidepressants do work on patients. They reduce anxiety, they reduce depression, but that doesn't necessarily mean that anybody understands how they work in the brain. Turns out, certain antidepressants, like anti-anxiety medications, they don't work on serotonin, or maybe they do work on serotonin, but what they also do is they reduce inflammation in the brain. They are basically central nervous system anti-inflammation drugs, anti-inflammatories. They work the way that, aspirin and ibuprofen work in your body. They're non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but they just happen to be active on your brain. So they actually can be useful in treating the symptoms of Lyme disease, because Lyme disease goes straight to your brain, because your brain is a fatty organ, it's fatty tissue, and the Lyme bacteria love it. They feast off of it. When they do that, your immune system reacts by causing inflammation. Your brain tissue gets inflamed. When your brain tissue is inflamed, it puts pressure on your nerves. When there's pressure on your nerves, it's just like having a pinched nerve, or it can be like having the fatty coating stripped off of your nerve, which is what happens in multiple sclerosis. There's an insulation on the nerve called myelin, and in MS, the myelin sheath starts to chip off, and then you essentially get short circuits, and that's what causes the neuromuscular symptoms from MS. Well, if your brain is inflamed, it causes all of this short-circuiting in your nerves, which can cause pain, it can cause numbness, it can cause tingling, it can cause tremors, it can cause fasciculations or twitching anywhere in your muscle tissue throughout your body, it can cause hearing loss, vision problems, all of these different neuromuscular problems. If you take Zoloft, it reduces your brain's inflammation, and then it improves the symptoms. One of those symptoms, there are the physical symptoms that I just talked about, the twitching, the nerve pain, numbness, things like that. There's also psychological symptoms. Anxiety. When your brain is inflamed, you can go into a panic. It's not a depression-related anxiety. It's not a social anxiety. It's a physiological anxiety. So, in this case, certain drugs like Zoloft do reduce anxiety that is not caused by a psychological problem, but is caused by a physiological inflammation of your brain. So, if a neurologist, as happened with me, suggests you might want to go to counseling because all of your tests are normal, you're healthy, but you think something is wrong with you, so go on an antidepressant because this is all a manifestation of depression. Well, it could very well be. It is a manifestation of brain inflammation from a bacterial or viral infection that is causing anxiety, and when you take an antidepressant, your anxiety goes away. But that means your cure, if you want to find the cure, is not going to be psychotherapy. That will help you cope. That will help you learn to live with these persistent symptoms. But things like Zoloft, while they will make you feel better and can be very useful, they're not going to bring you to any sort of resolution or cure of your illness if you have a bacterial or viral infection that's causing your anxiety and depression. It's something to think about. That's something on the horizon in medical research. And so with that said, this has become a 2-hour-long diatribe, but I hope it's helpful to some people to understand Lyme disease, particularly if you have had any of these symptoms, if you've been on this medical treadmill where doctors keep suggesting maybe you do have MS, maybe you don't have MS, you do, you don't, you do, you don't. It's all in your head, it's imagined, it's anxiety. Go take this pill and you'll calm down. Basically, they're sedating you, or they may be treating your symptoms, as I said, but not actually bringing you to any resolution. It's your body, it's your life. Do the research, find out what's on the horizon, and make sure that you find doctors who respect you and who are going to give you the care that you deserve. And that doesn't mean that As I said, everything is known, everything is not known, and not everything is treatable or curable. There are a lot of mysteries still, but if your doctor is condescending and we're just afraid of these supervisory organizations, their medical boards, the CDC, the Infectious Diseases Society of America, insurance companies actually are the greatest culprit in this, then they may not be treating you even though they may know more. So what's most important is that people find doctors who really listen. You have to force them to listen. You have to say things to them like, am I bothering you? Am I taking up too much of your time? Are you really listening to me? I really need help here. When you tell them your symptoms, don't say, oh, I've been really tired. Because remember, most doctors are trained to go through a diagnostic checklist in their head. Does the person have this? Do they have this? Do they have this? Then they put together all the elements and say, okay, these are the things it could be. So being tired could be due to a number of things, including anxiety and depression. If you're depressed, you don't want to get out of bed. But that's why you need to put everything in context of your life. Instead of saying, I'm really tired, you need to tell them what that means in your life. For example, I'm not sad at all. I don't feel like I'm depressed at all. But for some reason, I have not been able to get out of bed. This has affected my life tremendously. I can't get to work some days. I don't get out of bed on the weekends. I used to be very, very, very active. I would go hiking all the time. I would ride my bike 40 miles a weekend. I would go skydiving, and now I'm exhausted, and I don't feel like I'm depressed. I just don't have any energy. And that way, they'll understand, oh, this isn't normal for this person. This isn't a couch potato who's been sitting around his or her whole life watching television and eating a bag of chips, and they're just depressed and sad because of their social life or their upbringing or something. This way they'll know, wait, this person's normal mode of operation is very active, and therefore this is a really significant kind of fatigue that came out of nowhere. And tell them, like, if you spent a lot of time outdoors before, well, guess what? That's how you get bitten by ticks. You have to consider the context and make sure that your doctors are considering the context rather than an isolated list of symptoms, because that's the way that you're going to get through to them. And a lot of doctors you won't get through to. So potentially, if you've spent 2 hours listening to this, I'll tell you, I can save you the 5 years I've spent hopping from specialist to specialist and spending a lot of time with, you know, this doctor and then this doctor and this doctor. When you walk into a doctor's office, if you know that this doctor is being patronizing, condescending, not listening to you, rushing you, and maybe his or her office is, more overwhelmed with processing paperwork and things like that, which isn't their fault, but the thing is, it will affect their treatment of you because they have another priority, which is running their business versus focusing on the patient. If you get any of these red flags, just say thank you. Thank you for your time and go to the next doctor. Find another doctor, because that doctor, you're not going to get them to come around for you. The point of this is not for everybody with every little problem to go to their doctor and demand every kind of test for Lyme disease and insist that they have Lyme disease. Everyone does not have Lyme disease. And that's part of the Infectious Diseases Society of America's thing, is that they say there's this fad of imagining imagined Lyme disease, and everybody's on the bandwagon. Anyone who thinks anything is wrong with them blames it on Lyme disease nowadays. Well, that's not true. It isn't true. Maybe some people are overly worried because people do buy into hysteria. Don't do that. Don't assume that you have Lyme disease. But if you've been for years and years and years having all of this short circuitry throughout your body, or you've got stretch marks all over your body and you're not overweight, or you are overweight and you have stretch marks in weird places like your knees, or you have extreme arthritis and you're not elderly and your rheumatoid arthritis tests, your ANA tests and other autoimmune disorder tests are negative, then consider that you could have Lyme disease and find someone who will take you seriously. I will tell you, in all of my investigations, I've discovered, yes, there appear to be some doctors who are exploiting the inability of patients with Lyme to access care, to find competent Lyme doctors or doctors who will treat Lyme. And some of these people are really irresponsible, and they're selling their own gimmicky products and services and supplements and all kinds of things. Not to say that supplements are not effective, because my understanding is they can be very effective in treating Lyme. But there are some predatory doctors and predatory products and services that prey on people who have Lyme disease and are desperate for treatment but cannot find a competent doctor or a doctor who will take them seriously. So that's something to really watch out for. But Lyme literate medical doctors, that's how they refer to themselves, that's how people with Lyme refer to them, LLMDs, are often criticized by CDC, picked on by insurance companies, sometimes put out of business by insurance companies, and then they are able to reinstate their practices and things. You need to consider that just because they've been sanctioned or disciplined does not mean that they're incompetent. It may actually mean, in the case of Lyme disease, that they are so dedicated to patient care that they are literally willing to risk it all. It doesn't make them quacks. It actually makes them the most competent of doctors. And if you find a good Lyme literate MD, I promise you, you will be amazed by the level of care, the level of involvement, how interested they are in knowing every detail of your experiences and all of your labs, and you'll be blown away by how much they know. Your visit with an LLMD is not going to be like a visit with the family doctor who sticks the stethoscope in all of your orifices, takes your blood pressure, and gives you amoxicillin. It's not like that at all. You're going to be getting, you know, high-level biology talk and microbiology, and you're going to be told about Borrelia and Bartonella and Babesia and the blood cells and the lymph nodes and how these infections operate within the body with their biofilms and their cyst forms and things like that, and how they affect the central nervous system and cause inflammation. And you should ask about your CD4 blood complement, which measures inflammation, and they'll be looking at eosinophil levels and things like that that ordinary doctors just don't pay any attention to whatsoever. Eosinophil is a kind of white blood cell that is in your regular CBC blood test. And for I brought that one up specifically because when I first went to the doctor in 2011 and had all this blood work up, that time that the doctor suggested, you know, well, asked, have you had an HIV test, and seemed to be implying that that may be the source of my problem. I think he was profiling me because I'm gay. But anyway, I was HIV negative, and still am to this day, thank God. And my blood tests were mostly normal, but and so according to him, I was totally healthy and normal according to my blood tests. Well, when I gave my Lyme doctor those blood tests along with all the others, this doctor reviewed every single paper before we even spoke, and circled the eosinophil level and said this was very high. What did your doctor say about that? And I said, the doctor didn't say anything about it. I noticed it was high back then because it was flagged by the lab, but I didn't ask about it because the doctor didn't bring it up. And the Lyme doctor said, well, actually, this is something that we look for because eosinophil is a specific type of white blood cell that specifically attacks, most often, parasitic infections. So, at that time, chances are better than not that you had some sort of parasitic infection. And I said, a parasite? Do people get parasites? And she said, well, bear with me here. And she said, you know, chances are very strong that you still have that parasitic infection, and that parasitic infection is Lyme disease and its co-infections. So they know these things. Regular doctors don't. So Lyme-literate MDs are something else, and they're something better. I promise you. Now, there are some doctors who call themselves LLMDs, and they really are preying on people, and they are incompetent, and that's so unfortunate, but that is what happens when there's a black market, because the general institutions like CDC and Infectious Diseases Society of America blacklist things. Just like when drugs are made illegal, drugs become more dangerous because people who want them or need them because they're addicted buy them on the street, and they get what they get, and they often get deadly combinations of toxic things. Well, you know, when Lyme doctors are punished for treating their patients effectively, then what happens? There's a huge market for desperate patients who really, really need help and figure out what's wrong with them, and you end up with a mix of doctors who work under the radar, many of whom, as I said, are very... they're only doing it because they took this Hippocratic oath, they got into medical practice to help people, and they feel like these are the people who need more help than anybody right now. Just like early AIDS patients and Ebola patients today, same sort of thing. They're like shunned, and so these people need help, and I'm going to help them. That is my role as a doctor. And then there are people who are predatory and dangerous, and my feeling is you'll probably know that if you find a Lyme-literate MD. You're going to know who's competent and who cares and who's not. If you walk into someone's office and they're trying to upsell you a bunch of stuff and just make a lot of money off of you, well then, find a different LLMD. Same applies to regular doctors, general practitioners, specialists, and Lyme doctors. If you walk into the office and you know that something is wrong with the way this doctor is operating, then you're right. You're right. Just move on. Plenty of fish in the sea. So, and use the internet as a resource. So, with that, I'm wrapping up this epic blabbering on Lyme disease, but good luck to anybody who has any of these problems. I encourage you to contact me. I'd love to talk to anybody else going through this stuff. This has been a life-changing experience, major growth opportunity personally, but also very difficult, unnecessarily difficult. difficult, and things are going to change. Things will change. That's on the horizon. But for now, it's a really difficult world for people with Lyme. So whether you have Lyme or not, or you know anybody or not who has it, please be an advocate, because, you know, elected officials need to know more so that policy can be better aligned, so that the political influences can filter back down to the CDC and put pressure on them to follow the science instead of the dictates of the large corporations, being the insurers and the test, the diagnostic testing manufacturers and people who have tons of money and therefore own politicians who can direct the administrators what their policy should be. That's not the way that our healthcare system is supposed to work. You have to be your own advocate, and you should be an advocate for people who have Lyme disease, because at this point, nobody needs help more than people who have Lyme. If it hasn't affected your life yet, it will. More than cancer. You know somebody who has cancer, well, guess what? You're going to know somebody who's got Lyme disease. Within the next 10 years, the rates are only going to increase. It's not going to be 1 in 1,000 anymore. Who knows? It could be 1 in 100. This could be devastating if the, you know, if it's not nipped in the bud, and this bud is already a branch. So many branches need to be nipped now. Don't let it turn into a forest, because that's going to be too much for anyone to take on. Good luck, and signing off.